Hey everyone, welcome to Head Check Health Talks. I'm Eric Vanderholm, the host, and today we've got Ben Finelli. So he's a former Ontario Hockey League player. He's now the founder of Heroic Minds, where he's on a mission to reinvent self-help. Ben suffered an injury from a hit in 2009 that caused him a fractured skull, two subdural hematomas, and an epidural hematoma. In other words, he was bleeding in three different places in his brain. He was unconscious for over a week. And when he came to, the doctors told him that he would never play sports again and that his life would look very different from then on out. But Ben had other plans. He stayed active on the Kitchener Rangers, completed a triathlon during his two-year recovery, and after 2 years, he rejoined the team and played for 3 years, eventually becoming the team captain. He was the assistant coach at the University of Waterloo men's hockey team and has earned a bachelor's degree in communications and a master's degree in psychology. And since 2018, Ben has been building Heroic Minds, where he seeks to highlight the philosophy, psychology, and the history of the hero's journey and its ability to transform human life. Anything I'm missing there, Ben? Want to introduce yourself anymore?
That sounds pretty good. I would say at the end there, we've expanded from heroism to multiple forms of health education, but I'm sure we'll get into that as we go here. But I appreciate the intro, and now it's big shoes to fill.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I just, you know, I saw that on your LinkedIn. It was an interesting thing that I kind of picked out about the hero's journey. I think it's really interesting, the conjunction of those different areas. But I know obviously it's evolved a lot since 2018. So I'm interested in hearing more from you about that. So I guess my first question here, Ben, is I heard in one of your talks, you said that real toughness is being able to accept the position that you're in and then find a way to deal with it. So for you, what was the most difficult thing that you had to deal with during your recovery initially from this injury?
Yeah, beautiful question. I the toughest thing was, and this is I think what inspired me to do the work that I do today. I thought I was the only one that had the biggest fear growing up of what if this doesn't work out. You know, what if I don't make it to the NHL? And as I there was a time there where people were telling me I would have a really good chance of getting there. And so that just took off to a whole nother level where my biggest fear was what happens if this doesn't work out. It wasn't anything else.
Wow.
Right? Which might sound crazy to someone outside of that experience. However, that's, you know, in the work that I do today, there's perpetuating factors in our current model as well when it comes to, I think, excellence in sport. But that was going back to your, we can get into that later, but going back to your main question, that was the biggest thing I had to accept. After I had my injury or sustained my injury, it was, wow, what? No idea. How am I going to have friends? How am I going to fit in? How am I going to be cool? What am I going to do for a living? So on and so forth. And I know that sounds neurotic, and it is. And that was the first step towards actually freedom, if I'm being honest, was facing that, what I now call the monster under the bed, the weight that you carry with you, the fear you carry with you that you don't have to. And sometimes you encourage people to be brave enough to face that uncertainty or the ideas they don't want to accept. And sometimes you're forced into it. And I think in that position, life said, hey, it's time to look in the mirror and maybe take a peek under the bed. And that's what I did. And again, it was unbelievably freeing, which is not what I thought it would be.
Interesting. So, you know, I guess you had this idea in your head about getting to the NHL, and you had to just kind of accept the new reality that you were in, and that was full of unknowns. And so was that the part that was scary? Am I understanding that right?
Yeah, I think there were multiple different factors. I think it was that I saw myself in one way. I saw that success in life, and I don't just mean monetarily, I mean socially, behaviorally, that success was going to be is single-sided, and it's through playing in the National Hockey League, and that everything else in the short term, enjoyment, bingo. And so you and then there's this almost automatic sacrifice in the moment to give up the passion and the joy and the excitement, because there's also this idea that to get there, you have to be obsessed and you can't take any days off, so to speak. And I'm learning more about that now in the work that I do. And we have a lot of anecdotal evidence to support that that's not true. But here's the challenging part is when we do live that way, it gives us a false perception of control, because we have no control. You see it all the time that people that could have, should have been all-stars. One person that I look up to and respect so much, there's a bunch of them, but one I'll focus on when it comes to the concussion piece that I played against for a short amount of time in the Ontario Hockey League was Joey Hischin. Could have, should have been an NHL all-star. How the heck did he not make it? Right. And so there's, and it was because of unfortunate injuries towards the end of his career. And it's like, well, he didn't see that coming. He had no control of that. And the list goes on of how many, whether it's timing, economics, so on and so forth, that dictates if you're going to get there or not. And so there's so much out of our control that if we obsess and have this anxious attachment to sport, we kind of turn a blind eye to the pain that's causing, because it gives us a false perception of control, which is what we want. And you take that one step further and playing the game with that tension and that weight actually moves us away from a headspace of freedom. You know, we lose a bit of that passion and enjoyment, and we go from opportunity seeking to failure avoidance. And the antidote to that is often we're told is hard work and doing more. And it's ironic, because that pushes people away from an effortless place where they can perform freely. And I'll end with this. I bring this up in a lot of the talks that I do now, and I'll ask at any level, I'll say, you know, when you're up for recess or when you used to go up for recess, what would you do? And, you know, you could guess the answers, you know, football, basketball, manhunt, tag, all these games we would play at recess. And I said, did you ever once have to tell yourself to work hard when you were up for recess? Did you ever have to force yourself? Did you ever have to prepare accordingly and add in all these cognitive gymnastics to go out and play with joy? And did you worry about how well you were going to do at recess? And everyone says, no, it was there naturally. And I don't think we teach that when it comes to performance. I see it as the opposite. Do more, try and control more, no days off. And there's more data than there's ever been, so everyone can calculate every stat, which is so cerebral, which we know doesn't lead to performance. And so I just find that so ironic right now. And we see the best of the best, Lando Norris, Alcaraz, Scottie Scheffler, Mark Scheifele. Like, you really sit and listen in all these documentaries. I mean, the advent of social media and these Netflix documentaries are incredible. And you sit and you look at them, and it's not hard work that's setting them apart. Effort is a part of it, which isn't clearly defined either in the research. But for what I think we could all agree on, yes, there's a degree of effort. However, what we see in the elite is their relationship with sport is different. And I won't take this any further, but it's like they do it for them. It's not for coach. It's not for mom or dad. It's not for their agent. It's for them. The energy is voluntary, right? The effort is voluntary. They see their sport as an opportunity, as an art that they want to learn more about. I don't think that's often how we talk about what leads to sport performance. Like, we're not really talking about a psychological foundation or a personal philosophy or even a relationship with what we're doing. I'll pause there for now, because I can keep going, but I'll stop there.
No, that's a really interesting point about playing in the, you know, because I think back to my childhood, right? Like, running around in the forest and playing tag and whatever. And I would get sweaty and I would be working really hard, but I didn't have to try to work. I just ended up working hard. So it's interesting because, yeah, like Mark Scheifele, I don't know a ton about Mark Scheifele, but from what I understand, he's a huge hockey nerd. Like, he can't help himself but just know every single little thing about hockey. And it's just because he loves it. And you can have that same passion for Pokemon cards, right? It could be for anything. So, you know, you've got these performance coaches or mentors and stuff right now. Talk to me a little bit about Heroic Minds and what you're working on now, because it sounds like it's quite different than what we typically would see in that space.
Yeah. So I high level, the mission is to make health education more accessible, more exciting, more engaging. And that's bringing in even, we have a meeting next week, even bringing in financial literacy, physical literacy of all sorts, where these really potent ideas that relate to general well-being, not calling it mental health, but taking the approach of living your life to the best that you can, and in turn is probably going to enhance your psychological experience or emotional experience or behavioral experience. And so shifting the narrative away from the mental health narrative that I think people are growing tired of, and changing to life performance. Knowledge is power and power is potential. So how do we arm people with education and to actually sit with ideas and understand them and embody them and plug them into their lives? Because I don't think right now expecting people to sift through if you just take an athlete, they're not going to sift through Psychology Today to look for resources. When they're on Instagram and TikTok, their priority is not education. And so how do we create a place where we can bridge that? How can we create a place where we can bridge really insightful, reliable education from professionals around the world, deliver it in a way that is engaging? And we're hitting a stride now, getting tons of incredible feedback from our partners, such as the OHL and the WHL, where we'll have custom playlists where leagues and teams can create a list of content, whether that's audio, video, text, or a series of content. And that'll be directed at all their athletes. So whether it's on substance use, physical literacy, maybe mobility, understanding of certain muscle groups, the list goes on, social, emotional intelligence, et cetera, where there's tailored content from reliable, certified professionals. And it's right there. They can track their progress, set goals for the week. And so, yeah, kind of flipping this whole conversation on its head and to put all the resources someone might need in the palm of their hands. And then the last step is direct access to professional support. So one thing we're really excited about going into this potentially CHL partnership, we still have to get Quebec involved, is that every player in the league will have access to those educational resources anytime through the year, and then private and secure access to professional support if they ever need it. And they don't have to tell parents, they don't have to tell agents, they don't have to tell anyone. It's fully secure and private, and they can connect with professionals through Heroic Mind. So it's a big mission, don't get me wrong. One that I'm super excited about. Some exciting doors are opening now. And yeah, so that's the mission with Heroic Mind.
Really cool. Really cool stuff that you're working on for sure. You said you're getting a lot of really interesting feedback. One of my questions here would be like, what are some common misconceptions that young hockey players have about mental health?
Great question. I see a lot. I actually see a lot of similarities between society's approach to a lot of things and the challenges we're seeing in sport. I mean, one prime example is that there's a belief that if you get to the NHL, life's going to be perfect. You'll have tons of money, attention, et cetera, and life's going to be perfect. If you look beyond the Sportsnet commercials and the Gatorade commercials, we know that that's not true. That life goes on, there's going to be problems, you still have to find purpose and meaning. And so I think that's one of the pieces we might be able to do a better job of, that also, if that is a conversation that's allowed to have, that we're allowed to have, and you realize, wait a second, there is no top of the mountain, I think it gives direction to the individual to see that, oh, I'm right where I need to be. And even if I do get to this metaphorical top of the mountain, I'm going to have to find meaning and purpose and excitement and nurture relationships, even if I'm there. So I have to do the same thing now. And the other ironic piece, when I work with, major junior players or junior A, that was the top of the mountain at one point. but it's no longer the top of the mountain. There's another top of the mountain. And so when I say there's a similarity between sport and society, we see the same thing in society. Well, once I make the next $20,000, then I'm going to be happy. And then you hit that, you're at that top of the mountain, and now there's another top of the mountain. And so we don't get to this place where we think, I'm right, I'm there, I made it. That bar keeps changing, right? And so that would be one piece that I often dive into, is reflecting on that it's there is no top of the mountain. You're right where you need to be, and whatever moment you're in, you're going to have to make the best of that moment. And that, an example I use with my audiences is, are you still as excited today as you were when you were 12 years old at Christmas for the gifts that you got that year? And people will say, no, I'm not that excited about the gift I got when I was 12. And it's like, well, where did that excitement go? What, it just left? And it's like, yeah, oh, these things don't last forever. And basically putting things in context that it's not going to last forever, and we have to keep going, and life's a journey, not a destination, which lets go a lot of that weight with young athletes that think, if I don't get there, things aren't going to work out. Life's not going to be great. And bringing peace of mind so they're not so anxiously attached to this idea of needing to make it to the NHL. And then one more piece, again, similar to society, sport and society, I would say, I think there's a common narrative now when it comes to mental health that negative emotion is bad, right? The negative emotion, negative thoughts are bad. And we see a response to that where if anyone's ever feeling anxious or uncomfortable or angry, we have to, it's bad and we have to get rid of it. And so now you have to jump in and have a cold shower or do your 2-minute meditation or take a vacation or do your gratitude journal. And those are great practices. Don't get me wrong. They're great practices. What we're expecting to get out of that, I think we need to be aware of. Right. So an example is if we run to the cold shower, but the problem is our relationship, our job, a problematic behavior. Well, going in the cold shower for 5 minutes, while it gives you a rush and endorphins and whatever else the science would suggest it does for you, great. But that's not solving the problem. And so I think we see a lot of symptom treating as opposed to the problem. And that makes sense, though. Often the problems are hard and they're complicated. Emotion is not easy to articulate or process. However, that appears to be, you know, if you look at my role as a psychotherapist, I'm no wizard, I'm no genius. I tell all my clients, I don't have all the answers. We're in this together. And the mission is, instead of fighting negative emotion, instead of seeing it one way as this is bad, what if we worked with it? What if we created a space for half an hour where we actually allowed that negative emotion to exist, such that we could see it from different angles, right? We thought it was a square for so long. Mm-hmm. But now all of a sudden we realize it's a cube and we can see this different ways and we can work with it differently. So that'd be my second point, is that there's a common approach that we have to fight negative emotion, and negative emotions bad. And the last example I'll give is scary movies, roller coasters, and cold baths or ice baths. All of those, I do this exercise with in my workshops. I say, you go and watch a scary movie, does it make you feel scared, uncomfortable, uncertain, lack of control? And everyone's like, yeah. When you want a roller coaster, scared, uncomfortable, concerned, fear for the future? Yes. And do we label those emotions as bad when we go on the roller coaster or watch the scary movie and everyone says no? I say, does it actually add to the experience? And they say yes. And then I say, what about when we're sitting on the bench, there's 5,000 people in the stands, the puck's about to drop, and we feel anxious, uncomfortable, and fear for the future? Now what do we label those emotions as? And all of a sudden they're like, wait, we label them as bad there. So I think it's a big part of this is our relationship with negative emotion and negative thoughts. And it's exciting to have these conversations with individuals that have never been told that, right? Like, I've had clients that I'll say, hey, just because you have a negative thought doesn't mean it's going to come true. And they're like, oh, I never thought of that. Wow. Okay, so I can have negative thoughts? I don't have to be perfectly positive all the time? And I'm like, yeah, you don't have to be positive all the time. And they're like, oh, that's what I thought this whole thing was going to be about, how to be positive all the time. And I'm like, that's pretty tough to be able to do, especially when you're trying to do what less than 1% of the population is able to do. So how do we allow those emotions and thoughts to be a part of our life, to work with them? What are they telling us? How can that influence our behavior and ultimately lead us to hopefully a more harmonious state of mind versus this hyper-positive state of mind that I think, feel like some people assume they have to get to?
So I want to pick up on a thread there. You talked about financial. So earlier on in the conversation, you talked about adding things in like financial literacy. And then just on this past question, you talked about not actually treating the problem. I wonder if as kids grow up, these young hockey players grow up, their life inevitably becomes more complicated, right? They have to start learning about how to do their taxes, and, you know, inevitably, like, their parents start to do less and less for them. And maybe, like, I could be way off base here, but, like, maybe these kids that dream of making it to the NHL, they have that singular focus. They just kind of hope that they can figure out that one thing, and then they never have to deal with any of those other things. And when they start to realize that maybe that could not happen, then all those other things become really scary. And so once again, I could be completely way off when I say this, but from that perspective, I do like this idea of bringing in life skills into your program. Does that make sense what I just said?
It's a beautiful point. Like, think about what, like, you, simple arithmetic. I put 95% of my time into one thing. Mm-hmm. With less than a 1% chance of having success. And I look around and I realize maybe some, not all, there's incredibly well-rounded, smart, competent hockey players out there at all levels. So I'm not generalizing here. This just can happen. So you look at someone that's putting 95% of their time into something they have less than a 1% chance of succeeding at. What do you think that does for the relationship with sport? We talked about anxious attachment to sport, desperation to sport, such that we're often thinking, calculating everything, not in a position where we can just pay attention and respond to the world around us. We're trying to think everything through, which slows us down in the sport performance literature. So think about that. We put 95% of our time into something we have less than a 1% chance of succeeding at. And then we want to be free and we want to be positive all the time.
Yeah.
Right. And so to your point, it's like we look outside now and things do look a little scary. Well, what am I going to do after? What skills do I have? Where's my resume? And then this is the connection and the work that I would do is, why not nurture the rest of your life too? Develop other skills, have other hobbies, because if anything, that gives you peace of mind that, you know what, I'm going to give this everything I can, but I've also got all these other parts of my life that can actually buttress and support that chase of the NHL. I really can, because now you can have more peace of mind knowing, okay, well, this is one part of my life, but I've got so many other things I could do, and I'm probably going to do whenever I retire anyway. So, yeah, I think the one way we get that wrong talking with young athletes is we don't connect it back to how that's actually going to improve their performance.
Right.
I think we miss that. We talk, hey, do other things with your life. And they assume, oh, that's because you're telling me I'm not going to make it. Yeah. Oh, you're preparing me for career.
Yeah, when you say that, it kind of sounds to me like the antithesis of what I heard a lot of times growing up. I was a competitive swimmer. I was no good at hockey, but I always heard, burn the ships, yeah. You know, go all in on swimming. Don't do anything else, you know. And maybe that wasn't – maybe I would have been a better swimmer if I – also did cross-country skiing, you know, or something else that I wanted to do.
I mean, how many more, look at this is where I said the advent of media, social media, these incredible sport documentaries. I mean, you brought up a friend of mine, Mark Scheifele. Like, he's outside of the rink, incredible man, incredible person. He's probably doing two escape rooms when he's not at the rink. Like, he's living, he's doing other things. He's reading, he's got goats. He's like, he's into horses now with his wife. Like,
you've got Zach Hyman too.
Scotty Scheffler shows up to the Masters.
Doesn't Zach Hyman do a video game training program or something where he plays like League of Legends? The guy's crazy.
He's Andy wrote a book. Like, I think we underestimate the power of people sometimes. And, you know, Jokic in the NBA wins the national title. People are like, oh, he doesn't seem to care that much. And then his racing horse wins a race and he's got tears in his eyes. He's so happy. And everyone's saying, where was that when they won the NBA title? And it's like, it's all around us, right? Alcaraz, his documentary said, is literally called My Way. He wants to be the best tennis player he can, but he's not going to sacrifice the rest of his life. Like there's, it's all over the place that we're seeing this, but here's where I think, to your point about hearing it in a way where it's like, oh, Ben's just preparing me for this not to work out. Right? But it's fair. I get it. It's fair. That's where it is actually giving us the freedom to fully chase something, knowing I can be all in now because I have all this other stuff going on. If you're anxiously attached and desperate, you're not actually all in. You're desperately in, but you're not paying attention and your mind is not quiet in the immediacy of the moment often because of the fear that you're also carrying with you. So every pass is a little bit heavier. Every stride is a little heavier. This sense of, you know, a lot of people like to discuss confidence. Well, confidence is the ability to trust yourself, right? An image I often show when I'm doing a workshop is someone on a tightrope, you know, 100 feet up. And I say, for some people, that's just another step. And for other people, it's the most important step of their life. And what changes that? Perception and their relationship with what they're doing. And so I think it's beautiful that we have these examples now. I share them with as many people as I can because this just happened to yesterday. It's happened numerous times. I'll connect with an old teammate or someone I used to play against. And I'll obviously get into this stuff because I love it. And I'll bring up all the work that I'm doing and things I'm interested in when it comes to human behavior and performance. And I would say 9 out of 10 of the people I played with or played against would say, knowing what I know now, I wish I could do it all over again because I'd have so much more fun. And I think what happens is they get out of the fishbowl, meaning the fishbowl that everything is my sport, live and die on my sport. They get out of that fishbowl and they realize, holy smokes, I can be safe and secure and loved and live an exciting life outside the fishbowl as well, maybe even greater. And they're like, holy smokes, if I knew that, if I would have known that when I was so scared to mess up and so scared of what would happen if I didn't become who I thought I could be, how good would I have been? How much more exciting would the journey have been? And so that is really at the root of everything I do. I would say that's what drives me. And I would say, again, you could compare that to life. Like, how often are we scared to make change and scared to tell the truth and stuck in that what I'm feeling is terrible and I'm weak and I can't do this? Like, imagine people lived a life where they were actually realizing I'm the author here. I'm in control and I have an opportunity to move in the direction I want to go, where life becomes an adventure, right? Like, that's how I approach whoever I'm working with, whether it's a first responder, athlete, or an issue outside of sport. It's like, this would be a lot more exciting of a conversation if we talked about it as if it was an adventure versus this massive mountain we have to climb and it's going to be so difficult. It's like, wait a second, let's just even change how we talk about this stuff. But anyways, I'm getting carried away. I'll hand it back over to you.
No, it's all very interesting and you're very passionate and that's awesome. It's always awesome to hear. Just mandatory question about concussions, since we're a concussion company. We haven't talked about concussions at all. You know, you've been talking about athletes' sense of identity and, you know, the journey. How does concussion come into play with that? If an athlete, let's say, is already struggling with these concepts that you've been talking about, what does a concussion do to, you know, what's often overlooked, I guess, or people don't expect about getting their first concussion or their third concussion? I know what you got was more than a concussion, right? But I'm sure you've dealt with some athletes that have had concussions.
Yeah, but it's all... Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And they're all so different. what the diagnosis is medically versus what the symptoms are, that is all well beyond my education. So I won't comment on that. Anecdotally, I have heard that, again, regardless of the diagnosis, the symptoms can be better or worse. And it's so variable. I do think we miss the social side of that conversation. It being an invisible injury at times, I think we lean to the science. Like, what data can I get? How do I know what's going on? That we sometimes forget the social side of the individual in those shoes. Like, this injury is kind of invisible. Like, my body still works, my legs work, my arms work. Like, maybe I can jump back in. And to think, you know, I don't think it's a one word, one sentence answer. I really don't. I think it's sitting down with someone and actually having a real and honest conversation. And I do get a lot of referrals of athletes with head injuries. I think it's because of my past experience that people have heard about. And let's go back to the point we made where you hear me say, hey, you have other things going on in your life. On the surface, someone will say, oh, you're prepping me for end of my career. But really what I mean is it's actually to give you freedom while you still have a chance to chase it. Similar in the concussion conversation, if you just go up and say, hey, don't go back this early, don't go back fast, there's pushback and there's tension. I've experienced that. Yeah. And that's where a lot of the work that I do anyways, whether it's an athlete with a head injury or not, is about personal philosophy. It's about a psychological foundation. Who do I want to be? How do I want to go through this journey? What is really important to me? Am I going back because I'm afraid that the extra 2 weeks, 2 months, is it out of fear of that? Well, let's have a conversation about that fear then versus telling you to go back or not. Let's go into the fear. What's going on? Well, I might miss some games and I won't be seen by, okay. What's the long-term plan? You want to take this game as far as you can, right? Okay. That's taken sacrifice already. You've sacrificed your weekends. You've sacrificed time. You've sacrificed money, or your family has. So you've already made sacrifices to get ahead in the future. And so what if we played the same game here? You sacrificed maybe what your ego is telling you about that you need to get back now. And if you miss these 3 games, it's going to be the end of the world. Or why don't we sit with that? Why don't we question that immediate assumption? Why don't we question maybe that is there some desperation there? Am I also living in a narrative that it's not actually real? I could miss 3 weeks and still be great. I could miss 4 weeks and still be great. Are we just stuck in a narrative again where we have to go, 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 or we're going to fall behind? And so getting into the depths of it, instead of just saying, hey, be safe, don't go back. Well, a driven athlete, especially one that's close to having a chance to get there to that metaphorical top of the mountain, it's going to be hard to just win them over with a couple lines. And so I think it's about actually engaging with them at a human level. And like I said at the start, looking at the monster under the bed. The monster under the bed when you have a concussion ain't a nice monster to want to talk to, but I think you have to. And creating an environment where we can approach these things that we're often scared of. If I don't go back, what's going to happen? Will I miss an opportunity? It would be as simple as saying yes. You know what, Johnny or Lucy? You might miss those next 2 games as opportunities. You got this scout that might be there and this scout that might be there. Let's go right at it. You might miss those opportunities, but let's go back to our bigger mission here. What's your big mission, right? And so anyways, I'll stop there. But getting to the human side of it, and I think we miss that. We give them data, we give them the time off, how much time off, all the recovery they have to do. And I think we forget that under that jersey and helmet is a human being that's scared and bringing some compassion to that.
Yeah, and a narrative that they can have about themselves and their self-worth and everything like that, solving the real problem there, making them motivated to actually get the recovery that they need. It makes a lot of sense. Well, Ben, it's been great to have you.
That's on. That's a great point, yeah. Eric.
Sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Sorry,
go ahead.
I was jumping in to cut you off because I think you brought up such a beautiful point there, and I think it aligns with the work that you guys are doing. And this is not I didn't plan to say this, but... in the work that you guys are doing and the comment you just made, there's so much lack of perceived agency in concussion or head injury, yeah. Right? Where it's like, well, I don't even really know what's wrong. So is eating more fish oil or going for runs or doing, and definitely the research is growing there, which is great, but there's still a perceived lack of agency. Oh, I just have to rest. I get to do aerobic training and then I just rest and cross my fingers. And so I think that's another side of the conversation there that you just touched on is if you can get to a place where the conversation comes back to, okay, what do I have control of? Is maybe taking the extra week something I am choosing that I am in control of that's going to be greater for me in the future, and it's an investment into myself, right? And so I just wanted to touch on that, and obviously the work you guys are doing at Head Check Health is aligned with that. So beautiful little plug there that you led me into.
Beautiful. Well, I appreciate it, Ben. You've been great to talk to, and you've been a wonderful guest. If people want to learn more about Heroic Minds, just before we hop off here, where can they go?
Pretty much anywhere. And type in Heroic Minds. Google, our website's probably the easiest because you get all the screens. You can learn about how the whole platform works and even how to get involved, apply for check out our team discounts. And if you're a creator, so if you're a professional in the space, any type of health professional or on the social behavioral side, emotional behavioral side and counseling, psychology, et cetera, you can go to that webpage as well and create an account to get started. Yeah, it's free to join, both for users and professionals. And then if users want to take it one step further and unlock all the content from the professionals, there's a monthly subscription they can opt into. So yeah, Heroic Minds online, and you'll get all the information.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Ben. And thanks to everyone for joining us here today. And have a good rest of your day, everyone. See ya.